Hello and welcome to Tech Grumps. It is a festive Tech Grumps because it is a week before Christmas and there is snow everywhere on the ground. And we have today...
There's even snow under my computer, apparently.
No, that's dandruff. Anyway. Or it could be Coke. Anyway. So, as you just heard, we have Tom Morris. The Tom Morris? Should I call you the Tom Morris? Or should I call you Tom
Morris? You can if you want. You'd be flouting some rules of grammar, but, you know.
Okay. I'm dyslexic, so that's my excuse. Right, anyway. Okay. And also we have Abizar.
Hello.
You know what's funny? I was thinking this all day. Have you ever seen that... You see the advert for Freeview Plus?
No.
Okay, well, it's an advert of Freeview Plus, and there's this kind of weird... I don't even know what it is. Is it like a... It's like a little miniature... oh, God, squirrel? And you kind of, your voice sounds a bit like that. Sorry.
I sound like some squirrel off an advert.
Anyway, moving on.
Thank you.
So obviously we're in jolly mood because it is Christmas and all that. Although we are, the mood will lessen as time will move on. So, what's our first bone of contention today?
Shall I start? Because I've got a one that's fully formed from yesterday.
Go on.
So I was writing up a blog post yesterday about the whole process of building a Hackintosh, which I did a few months ago, and I've only.
What you meant to be doing?
You finally got your Wi-Fi card.
We finally got around to doing it, and the whole thing didn't work. So we've ordered one of those like wireless gateway thingies that. They're like £15, and okay. Basically they're the thing you use if you've got like an Xbox and it's got Ethernet and it hasn't got Wi-Fi. Right. Basically, you plug it in over Ethernet, and then you set it up to hook up. It has like a web app thing where you can set
bridge.
Yeah, a bridge thing. Yeah. So apparently, whenever the snow's out of the way, Amazon will be ringing one of those. Mm-hmm. But no, I was writing the blog post.
Weren't you meant to write a blog post about bar camp, how to do a bar camp?
No. Okay. We were writing this thing called a book, Ian. Okay. You know, we were meeting on IRC today to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
And a bunch of us met up on IRC and...
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you write it.
Well, I wrote it up on mine, and people saw it on there. Anyway.
You didn't tell me about it, so I didn't know if you write it. Okay. Anyway...
Anyway, so I was writing up.
I didn't want to do one, Ian.
I was writing up this thing for the blog, and you know, I was writing up all the various bits of kit that went into this machine. And one of the things that went in is one of Intel's new processors, the i5-650, and which is very, very nice. But it's kind of a weird thing because it has this thing called Turbo Boost.
Turbo Boost.
Which sounds, it's always compared, if you read the blog post comments about stuff, it's, you know, people are always talking about, you know, the old PCs from...
with Turbo on it, yeah.
Yeah, like the 286, 386 kind of era, where they had a Turbo button on the front, which you pressed and they went faster.
Built-in overclocking.
Yeah.
Press it if you want to go faster.
Well, actually, Turbo Boost is kind of an interesting thing, because it gives you extra... like peak performance. If it just needs a bit of extra power, it can kind of overclock the CPU a bit, and then
probably wrong way of going. What it basically does, it runs in lowest, underclocks it most of the time and goes up to normal.
Yeah, it underclocks it so it meets the power spec which it has. But so I found lots of very kind of vague descriptions, kind of like the one I just gave. Until I eventually found a really, really awesome article on CNET from a guy called Peter Glaskowski. And it's an article called explaining Intel's Turbo Boost technology. And I read this and it seemed like an absolutely perfect piece of tech journalism, because it was explaining it's back from 2009. It was an article explaining the technology inside the then new Core i7 mobile processors, and obviously mobile has, you know, the need for something like Turbo Boost is actually quite a lot more useful in a laptop than it is on a desktop, where you've got shitloads of fans and water cooling and all that stuff. But anyway, it explained in quite some detail what the fuck was actually going on with this thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get right to the end, and it explains that that Peter Gluskowski is actually a chip designer who's worked in various companies doing chip design, and who has spent most of his life writing about and designing microprocessors. And you think, aren't these the sort of people who should be writing about technology? Like, I've gotten so used to it all being fucking Michael Arrington, Scoble, just basically loudmouth bloggers and people who know fuck all about technology but go on about it, that it's actually so refreshing when you read an article from somebody who's actually technically competent, that it causes me to actually sit back and say something is very, very wrong. It just kind of stunned me into silence for a few moments, thinking, why exactly did we decide to make it so tech journalism just became a thing where you got a bunch of sort of borderline trolls / sociopaths spend their days talking about Google versus Apple and all sorts of other quite mundane shit. Because
they're the ones that actually drive...
traffic. Yeah, it's all money. Yeah. It's all
about the traffic. It's all about the clicks. And it's all about the advertising. And these are guys who know how to basically hit hot buttons, get people talking, as they call it, and generate the interest. And it snowballs from there. It's like the current tabloid press. And I don't read it, but lots of people do. A lot more people read it than I know who read other stuff. But it's really popular. But if you read some proper articles or some proper journalism or some books, even without just reading up some three paragraph headline generating tabloid piece of muck, you get a completely different point of view. But it's easier to read tabloid stuff because I haven't read the article, but I can imagine what it was like. It was clear, it was to the point, it didn't use buzzwords, it didn't go breathlessly about, oh, this will change the world, or this will computing, or, you know, this is the end of Apple.
this is
the end of AMD. It doesn't go breathless like that. And you're used to reading stuff like that, so you can do it. But a lot of people are just so used to reading breathless yellow rag journalism that they just can't. To read something like that to them just sparks off boring, and they just can't be asked to put the effort into it. So,
well, and people can't seem to read, you know, unless it's got a headline. Like I read a headline from Engadget, which was talking, you know, we were discussing before the show, we'll probably discuss later, the Stallman's remarks about cloud computing apropos the Chrome OS release. Mm. And, you know, I was looking around on the blogs for what people were saying about this, and bloody Engadget described it as a Stallman hating on Chrome OS. And you think,
which had nothing to do with the Chrome OS, what he was talking about, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, the whole thing has reached a sort of point where it's beyond caricature. I mean, it's okay for, like, us to talk about goofy Apple, Google stuff, because we're a fucking, you know, comedy show. Like, we're called the fucking Tech Grumps. But when you've got, like, you know, there isn't anything else, it's like, you know, okay, it's fine for The Sun to have page 3, but if every other newspaper was basically doing page 3, X Factor, and that was it, like, something is definitely wrong.
Yeah.
But guys, it's a bit like, You know how the Daily Show and the Colbert Report and stuff like that. Yeah, they're on Comedy Central. They're comedy, but they actually do the news really well. You know.
Yeah, but that's how you get people to read it, to watch it, because it makes it easier. You know, I don't know whether I'm just sounding like your bog standard middle aged middle class sort of elitist here, but you know what I'm going to say. It's almost. I know this isn't the case. I know it probably isn't the case. I know there's more people who think than people who don't think. You know, it's
really.
Yeah, there are. They just think about different things. You know, some people might watch Strictly Come Dancing, and I might think it's a complete waste of time. But their whole life doesn't revolve around Strictly Come Dancing. You know, they have a life outside of it. But the people you hear about it, you know, to them their life is Strictly Come Dancing or X Factor or, you know, I'm an idiot, get me out of here. And it just sounds like that's all they think about, and it really isn't.
Well, you know, but what I don't understand is, you know, okay, I can see the kind of populist thing for just normal journalism, but why does it have to come into tech journalism? Like,
why has tech had to become part of the entertainment industry? Because we've become mainstream. Technology has become mainstream, and you get a lot of young people who know bugger all, and they decide they want to join the Microsoft Apple Linux wars, and they think they want to have an opinion. And you know, here's someone telling them what to have an opinion. It's not the opinion they want to have. And it's just easy for them to just open up a text box, type something into it, and post bullshit on blog comment sites. And the sites don't care because it drives up traffic. Yeah. They encourage it.
It reminds me, there was a really good article a while back called, it's called What to Know Before Debating Type Systems. Did you ever see this?
I know the first thing is not to call them fonts.
Sorry?
I know the first thing is not to call them fonts.
No. Type systems, like strict typing, you know, static typing, that kind of thing.
I thought you meant type as in...
No. Programming type typing.
Okay.
And it's a really, really amazing article, because it just goes through and explains...
Sorry. I just don't believe it. I'm confused.
We're cutting this out.
Yeah, please.
Maybe.
Won't be.
Anyway. But no, he was just going through and saying, you know, you get so many of these idiots on the internet and, you know, they're debating programming languages, and the only programming languages they've used are like Python and Java or Python and C.
HTML.
Well, yeah. HTML5 is the new programming language.
I code in HTML. Yeah. Okay.
and they basically they then come up with this sort of imaginary classification of type systems in their mind. On the one hand, they have strong typing, or you know, or static typing, or some sort of combination of those, which is represented by C or Java or C++ or something like that. And on the other hand, they've got dynamic type system, which is represented by basically PHP. And then there is nothing between the two. Ian's dropped off.
Yep, he's gone.
Ian Forrester.
That's all right. He's back.
Yeah, I've just had to...
connecting him. Well, at least the recording account's all going. That's the important one.
Yeah. Let me just check. Say something, Ibiza?
I'm talking.
Good.
I can see bars.
Right.
Ian looks like he's coming back on. Oh, he's typing something in the chat.
Come on, Ian. Hello.
That's weird. Okay.
Yeah. You sound like some desperate New York divorcee. Say, call me.
Get lost, man.
That's going okay. In.
Call me, I put it out.
I don't even put out. Get lost. Anyway.
Oh, Beasley, you've been so bitchy this evening. Anyway, it's all very depressing, and that's kind of what's been depressing me, most of this year.
Idiots on the interwebs.
Well, yeah, basically, you can just, for all of the episodes in the future, you can just take it as read that this is going to be the one thing which is annoying the fuck out of me. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, it seems like there's a structural thing. Like, I don't know how we can make it so that there are more things like Ars Technica and less things like Gizmodo and TechCrunch.
It's not going to happen.
Like, no, hold on. It will happen. I'll tell you what will happen. It's, you know, in the same way as when we first started, in the early days, you know, no one was interested in this stuff, and it became more and more popular, right?
This and then you got,
what's that?
I mean,
people got more interested in technical issues and that kind of thing, right? And then what happens is that something comes along, some technology comes along, and allows the people who really know what they're talking about to express themselves. So in the same way as when the first blog started, it was a very technical thing, and then only people that would blog were people that understood this stuff and actually got it, you know. And then now, obviously, everyone kind of gets it, and everyone's blogging. So what I'm saying is that it's the cycles. You know, at some point, you'll get something else that come along, and then, you know, the technical people will be on it again.
So you're saying
The technical people are still on it. What's happening is they're getting drowned out by the non-technical people, and it's
but I moved to another platform, and then I'm
saying it's getting harder to find stuff in the current platforms that's worth listening to.
Yeah.
Reading, you know, and you don't want to have a curation site, because the trouble with this stuff, as you call it, is that it's so long tail. People have such a widely diverse range of intersecting things that they like. You know, I like Lord of the Rings, but I don't like the Belgariad stuff, or that this is obviously hypothetical. You know, somebody says this, and I like a bit of chess, but I don't like drafts, and somebody else might have exactly the same thing. But so it's very hard to have like a curation site of you'll like this, because you may not like all of that. So it's actually getting harder and harder to find the things.
But okay, but the same way, right? You know, I find that, you know, when I go out and look at blogs, for example, there's a lot more people who actually understand what they're talking about than before. So it kind of like went through a phase where everyone had a blog, everyone was in, you know, was blogging about all types of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and before that, yeah, it wasn't like that. And then now it's become more like that. So when I look at blogs now, they're generally people who actually know what they're talking about. You know, well researched, well thought out kind of stuff, rather than the kind of frivolous stuff, which now moves to something like
Twitter or Facebook,
yeah, exactly. And so I think it will kind of come, you know, it'll come and go.
I just think you will have more of the technical sites, but you'll at the same time you'll have more of the trivia sites, and it'll just go up in that thing until, as you said, there's a new platform, and then it'll start off with the technical, knowledgeable stuff, and it'll go off into stuff that basically doesn't interest us, but it interests other people. You know, there's things on there that interest all sorts of people that you think, why, but they do. Have you ever seen Fabstar.fm?
What? Yes.
Fabstar.fm. It's just a site that shows you what the most popular tweets are on Twitter.
Most favourited, like most retweeted.
Well, I think they do retweets as well now, so they count both.
But they do. I think they have a bias towards stuff that gets favourited rather than stuff that
especially on the popular side. And I was actually going to do this as a major rant, but to be honest, I can't get that heated up about it. There's two things on there that, I mean, apart from the usual names that you'll see that doing something funny usually, that's okay. You get the Dalai Lama's always on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a couple of idiots tweeting about Bieber. Because A, you'll get something about
Justin Bieber.
It was Justin Bieber.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Not Bieber, Bieber.
I'm making it, sorry.
He's just some Canadian pop star.
I just on that point, I just saw he's got a bloody film coming out or something.
Yeah, he was on The X Factor in the UK, and that drove everyone nuts as well.
What the fuck? Anyway, go on.
And it's a very teeny thing. And so you can imagine his stuff going favourite, because he posts something or somebody posts something about him and everyone just favourites it. Okay. But the Dalai Lama, and I'm sorry, those tweets are just the most insipid, pointless, you know, it's
just
altruism. It's just,
I've never seen him. What was he tweeting about?
Just usual stuff about personal growth, and everyone's got the scene with peace. Crap like that. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Now, fair enough. He's on Twitter, he does that. But then everyone's obviously favouriting his tweets. You know, why not just say, look, here's all the Dalai Lama's tweets. I'm just going to read them and I'm going to follow. You have to favourite all of his bloody tweets, you know. It's
right.
But, you know, I really wish more religious leaders were on Twitter. It would be really, really hilarious to have a feed of everything the Pope.
The point that the stuff the Dalai Lama tweets about is just so mind-numbingly boring and obvious. You just can't get wound up to yell at him. I mean, some of the Pope would say you would, and you wouldn't bother with. But
it would be awesome if you were reading the Dalai Lama's tweets, and then just in the middle of it, it'd be like, yeah, I'm really enjoying the new Lady Gaga CD.
What?
You're supposed to be like up there in the clouds.
Oh yeah, the Dalai Lama, he's in the cloud. Okay, he understands that stuff. He knows how to yak. Yak.
The Pope's in his own private cloud.
This stuff's wasted. Yak. Get it? Tibet.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So what I was trying to say is that you'll have the new technologies and you'll have the new platforms and it'll get used by people above and in ways that techs and the people who develop these things didn't want it to go. But, you know, that's not really a bad thing. You know, we're always talking about freedom and how the stuff affects people. And, okay, they're connecting on a rapid level, but, you know, below the standard level of crap that everyone tends to go for, there's in between, there's that level where, you know, really good stuff is being done. And so you can't get too wound up about it. As long as you know what Fabstar's about. As long as your life isn't geared about, I've got to get on Fabstar and stay on there, you're okay.
But no, we've heard it before, so.
I get very annoyed when I look at mine because I go on and it's all, and like, there's some good stuff in there, but it's like, you know, I can just throw something out that's kind of just off the cuff bullshit, and it gets massively fav-starred, and then I can, you know, craft something intelligent and, you know, whatever, and then it just falls completely fucking flat.
I find it really weird about Twitter that you tweet something just out of nothing and you think, nobody's read it, and then you can be talked to somebody like a couple of months later and they'll remember that you said something on Twitter about it. It's like that thing you said about being in a prayer group. You just threw it out, and I remember reading it. And when it came time to sending you another tweet, I referenced it, and it was got you laughing. But this is one of those things that, you know, didn't need a fan star, but it had some sort of effect on someone.
I think my top fav starred thing is. I'm just looking at it now, and it says that my top fav star is when I said George W. Bush, quote, I'm an iPad person, Samsung should start using that in their advertising for the Galaxy Tab.
I think my top fav star one is overheard. Veni, vidi, visa. I came, I saw, I purchased.
Okay. Ian, you were saying?
Yeah, so I was going to say, you know, this is a new thing, yeah. This is... Yeah, you know, when you write something on a blog and you write a very detailed, well thought
out,
controversial, and then like no one replies, no one writes any comments, no one writes any kind of replies to it, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you write some throwaway piece of crap on your blog, and suddenly everyone's like retweeting it, and they're like, yeah, you know, retweeting it, they're blogging about it on their own blog, you know, there's nothing, no difference here really.
Which is why they always say, just write for yourself and don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I really don't care about all this stuff.
That's fine. I think my blogging changed a bit. I call it blogging. I have a website and I put stuff up there once in a while. But I don't put stuff up there. I don't put stuff up there anymore with the expectation that someone's going to be reading it as I post it. I tend to put it up there in the same way that I read other people's blogs. You know, I don't use an RSS reader anymore because I never get around to it. I just, you know, I search for things that are interesting and I do it that way. But sometimes people put posts up on their blogs which just act as reference pieces. And I read blogs as people putting up some sort of a a collective reference manual online rather than something to be read every day. Do you see?
So
in that sense, that's how I write mine. I write mine as, you know, here's something, you know, I'll have some topical stuff in there, but otherwise I'll just write something in there about Git or Xcode and somebody will come across it at some stage or somebody won't. But more often than not, I tend to, actually I put stuff up that I need to look up and I keep forgetting. So it's quite easy.
That's what I do. That's what it's a personal thing for myself, you know, I make reference to it myself.
Should we move on to Chrome and Stallman?
Wait a minute, who's running the show here? Yes, okay.
You weren't. You got disconnected.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to Chrome. What's the laptop called again? What's that? What's the
CR48?
CR48.
I've got the Stallman quotes in front of me. Should I set it up and then I think it'd be easy to want to rant about it.
You tell me more about it.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. You said it. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. So, so following the release of the CR48,
spoke about last week.
Everyone's favourite Free Software Foundation, you know, person is has come out and been virulently against it. Actually, Stallman hasn't, but one of Stallman's lackeys has been out.
Which lackey?
Matt Lee, the campaign manager at the Free Software Foundation, because it says here, Stallman couldn't respond to requests for comments by the press because he's in Libya, that well-known free country.
What the hell did he do in Libya? What the fuck?
Who the fuck? Anyway, the Free Software Foundation guy said, Google Chrome is not free software in the sense of free and open source software. It's proprietary. While there's GNU/Linux lurking in the background, users can't install apps or change anything on the machine. That's not acceptable. It's nothing more than Google wishing to restrict how people can use their computer. Then they were saying, well, but what about all this cloud stuff? And he said, it's a matter of convenience. People aren't thinking about the implications of what it means to give up your data to a private company.
He's right then.
And yeah, he's right about that. But later on in the article, they have Rob Enderley from the Enderley Group, who anyone who listens to Angry Mac Bastards may be familiar with this fucking nutcase, who seems to spend most of his life these days shouting at Apple.
Well, that sounds good.
Well, yeah, for not very good reasons, mind. And also, he was previously actually he was firmly in support of SCO.
Okay, bloody hell.
Basically, he is when he's right about something. He's right for the same reason a broken clock is right.
Yeah, twice a day.
Yeah. No, not even that often. Maybe a broken clock with a date function.
What do you mean he's right like a broken date, month, day, calendar, a month and day calendar?
Yeah.
Once a year-ish.
I was thinking more like if you had a, Y2K type problem.
Ah, okay.
It might be right once a millennia or something like that, you know. Anyway, but that's not the point. The point is that that the Free Software Foundation have come out against Chrome OS, and they've been saying, you know, that A, it's not open source, and B, you know, are you really wise to trust all your data to Google?
I wanted to bring this up because maybe it's not Stallman exactly, but the way they rail this as in, you know, they're blaming it on the proprietary version of the CR48. But the bit that they're saying is wrong about it is stuff that's been around anyway. You know, cloud computing and Gmail and people keeping their stuff on the cloud. You know, what they're getting really upset about is the fact that they don't, you know, you don't have any local storage, so you can't have anything yourself. But
Well,
I made this mistake last month when you were talking about the CR48, saying how this wouldn't exactly, you know, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that on it. I think I got lulled into thinking it's got a keyboard and it opens up, so it is a computer. And I don't think it is. I think it's more supposed to be what an iPad is, except with a keyboard. You know, just something you go and you consume. You consume stuff on it. You know, you can create stuff, but how much you can get is fairly limited to what you can do on the web. It's essentially what you have is you have. I think you've said this before, Tom. Is you have a laptop, you open Chrome, you go full stream, and you touch nothing else, and that's essentially what the CR48 is, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can do plenty of stuff in that, so long as you've got a network connection. I mean, you can go edit Wikipedia all day long if you like, but
You know, and it has a terminal, so you can go shell into something where, you know. So you can do some stuff on it, but I do think it's a good idea. But
well, it will be interesting to see, just as a proof of concept, whether people are actually going to buy into this idea of having a laptop which doesn't have any software on it, that's just all connected to the network. That'll be interesting to see whether actually they're going to be able to be successful commercially, because I don't think they will.
No, but they may be, because there are a lot of people who would want that, who spend their life doing things like, I mean, if all you ever did was the odd bit of email, Twitter and Facebook.
Sure.
This is what you need. You know, you could take pictures on your camera, stick your SD card in there because it's got an SD card slot. You can, you know, so you can transfer your pictures on.
It's the old Office thing again, isn't it? It's the Microsoft Office versus, alternatives argument again, which is that, you know, oh, you don't need 80% of the things in Office. You know, like, you only use, you know, X percent of the things in Office, so why do you need all the rest? Well, because everyone uses a different
80%
subset of the features which are available. So, you know, you say, well, why do I need this complicated indexing system? Well, because some fucker out there is writing a damn book in Word, you know. And if you don't use it, it's just a menu option which you skip past. So I think it's the same thing, but on a bigger scale. You can say, well, why do I need this local computing power? Well, everyone's going to have something which will be better running on their native OS, even if they do most of the things in the cloud. On the internet.
I think I know where you're coming from.
Then there's always going to be something you need which isn't. And as I said last time, it seems completely pointless to throw away like 20-odd years of development of these desktop operating systems, especially now that they're bloody well free, like, you know, or as close as damn it to free for like Linux and stuff like that. It seems completely pointless to build a computer which doesn't have that. It seems a bit sort of hamstrung. But
you know, to some people it might be useful. Apparently people in Google, they use it, and how do they manage it? They have all their stuff on their little servers, and their machines can log into their servers and do what they need to. So people are happy.
The Sunspot. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's basically a where is it? No, that's not it. It's not a Sunspot. It's a little a thin client thing which Sun used to make before they got eaten by a giant monster. and I can't bloody well find it, but it's not called a Sunspot because the Sunspot's something different. But basically, it's Sun Ray. I think that's what it's called, Sun Ray. And it's basically a little thin client thing. And if you go to the Sun, campus in the US, like their whole system have these basically stateless desktop Linux machines, these little teeny things next to them, with a card slot, and you just slide your card in, and it instantly comes up with your desktop, Windows, Linux, whatever it is, and then it's all just running on some big iron in the data center.
Let's take this a bit further. When I used to work in an office, you know, the main platform that the business was run on was an internet client. We used IE5, Which didn't matter because, well, it did matter because we'd be accessing external.
Because it makes it go.
Yeah, we'd be looking at external websites anyway, but, you know, most of the time that's what the platform was. So we used that. And if they could shift some of the, you know, that's what you spent most of your time in on this. And if you could get, you know, the odd bit of document handling and mail, obviously, would go online. Just imagine corporate companies would just be able to have this, you know, this cheap machine that's hooked up to a network. You know, where the administration of it is done online. You know, you could take this thing home with you and make no difference if you log in onto networks. There's no security implications of it. They're cheap. There's no state on them. All your data lives on the cloud and is backed up, and so the company effectively owns it. You know, in that sense, it's not a bad idea for businesses to be having if they could close down their workflows to just live on the web, which, you know, a lot of them are. So it's not that crazy an idea. Might be crazy to a lot of people, but, you know, the corporate market would probably look at this and go, ooh, this sounds good, except for the fact that the corporate IT market is for the people who have Windows MVCs and MVPs, and they don't want to lose their job when they're doing administering Google stuff.
So kind of on the stuff which the free software people have been moaning about,
mm-hmm.
which is the storing everything on the cloud has security implications, blah, blah,
blah. Right.
It does.
Yeah.
That said.
But then everything you do on this, just because, if you can keep your email on the cloud, fine. If you're that paranoid, if the government wanted to, they could go to your ISP provider and they'd just intercept your mail as it's coming in. Mm. Not only would they intercept your mail, but they could intercept your web history, your web browsing history, as it's happening.
What I don't understand is why the fuck don't people encrypt stuff if they have such a big problem with security?
Yeah, exactly.
Email encryption. We've had a working email encryption system since, like, when the fuck did PGP come out? Like 96, 97?
There is a new PGP as well.
There's GPG, which is pretty much what everyone uses these days, but. And there's various things which are based on, like, S/MIME and stuff like that. But why the fuck don't people just use that?
They're that worried about it, exactly. I mean, yeah. I can't...
4,000, and you can get browser plugins now to make all that work in Gmail as well, seamlessly. What's it called? Fire GPG, and there might be one for Chrome and whatever else. Like, why the fuck don't you do that? If you've got such a big concern about email, encrypt your damn email. But that would require other people to give a shit, too.
But it's down to the thing of the Free Software Foundation has its own agenda, and that's what they're going to push. So yes, it's true that all the, you know,
what agenda do they have?
Free software.
Okay.
Free software, nobody making money off software. Essentially, that's what the GPL's about.
It's not about making money off.
You know,
consultancy and stuff like that.
But you know. And he has a point in the fact that not everyone thinks about what they're doing with the data. Not everyone realizes that encryption is easy to do now. You know?
But what I don't understand is, right, unless you have your own server and you run your own mail server, right, you are going to have your mail stored somewhere. Right? Yeah. Whether that's daemon.co.uk or bt.com
or
whether it's Gmail... I don't see a big fucking difference there.
No.
In fact, I almost, given the track record of how shit ISPs are in this country, I trust Google about an inch more than I do those guys.
Yeah. You know? Wow.
This is not saying much, but it's saying something quite significant, which is that...
Were we talking about this in the chat where you said, you know, most people... don't know how to do it at all. In that case, they better give it to Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I don't quite... It goes like... The Free Software Foundation are buying into this cloud thing in one sense, which is that your mail is going to be on a server anyway. Like, you're either using POP3, in which case, what the fuck are you doing in this century? Right. Or you're using IMAP. Because, you know, you want to sync things between machines and things like that. And if you're using IMAP, then there must be a server somewhere. Now, this is either your own server, which, congratulations, you've managed to battle the Linux demons and get yourself set up with your own IMAP server. Great. 99.999% of people aren't going to do that. So what the fuck are they going to use? They're either going to use their ISP, or they're going to use Google or Microsoft or some other company. Well, once you have given it to another company for your mail, it makes very little difference where what that company is, with the minor exception of, you know, there might be geographical differences. You might prefer to have it hosted in a country which, you know, and you might, you know, you, if you really care about it, you might want to host it on something like, you know, there's some super secure mail services, IMAP services, which are hosted in, you know, sort of Sweden, so you've got the same sort of protection that WikiLeaks or
places.
But, you know, and if you have the sort of demands that the Pirate Bay or WikiLeaks have, then there's a free market out there. Go and buy hosting. But
it's not free like Gmail, and most people just want to have a Gmail account because they want to send emails about, oh, you're going to go to the Justin Bieber concert.
And the other thing which is slightly annoying is with all this stuff is there's always a sort of conflation between sync and cloud. Like, you don't have to have the cloud in capital C to do synchronization. You can do synchronization between computers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, case in point, Git. You know, you can do decentralized synchronization of data without having to have a central server. Why the fuck don't we do that? Like, it astounds me that we don't have better software for doing that.
Not yet.
And why aren't people building stuff on, like, if the free software people really want to help, how about making cross-browser, cross-platform, decentralized bookmark syncing? Then you wouldn't have the situation where this week there was a bit of a panic over whether Delicious was going to close down because somebody leaked some slides from Yahoo saying that they
were going to
quote sunset Delicious, whatever.
They did that.
Well, they said they're going to be
what? Wait, what?
Okay, Ian, let me explain.
I know there's people moaning about Delicious on Twitter, but I didn't know them.
Yeah, so what happened, let me explain, what happened is there was a slide from an internal Yahoo PowerPoint which listed a bunch of services which they were planning on closing or sunsetting. Okay. They didn't actually explain what sunsetting was. This is apparently internal jargon. This got leaked out and got onto TechCrunch or somewhere.
Oh, gosh.
And then everyone kind of went saying that... you know, they were saying, oh, well, this shows that they're going to be shutting down Delicious. And then people were like, holy shit, I need to get my data out.
Right.
So they probably had more API usage in the past week than they have in the last year.
There's one service called Pinboard is getting really hammered.
Yeah.
Pinboard's different now. It's not quite the same.
Well, they're all not quite.
I don't use Delicious anyway, so I can't see the point of it.
I use Delicious for a lot of things.
I use it a bit, but you know, so there's that, and like you've had that has closed. Well, that's kind of, you know, up in the air what they're going to do with that. Xmarks, which a lot of people use to sync their bookmarks between computers. That's up in the air. Nobody's quite sure what's going on with that. Actually, it was announced today that's been bought up by another company and that they're going to keep on running it and offer a pro service.
Right.
Like, these kind of things are fairly fundamental, having, like, a reliable place to store your bookmarks. I've just started using Chrome. Chrome browser, not Chrome OS. Yeah. And I've been using the sync on there, and it works pretty nicely. But
what does that do? That just sync your bookmarks?
It syncs all your browser settings between Chrome installs.
Okay.
It's actually quite good. It even syncs like what extensions you've got installed and stuff like that.
Okay, I might give that a go.
Which is actually quite handy, because like I've got a whole stack of Grease Monkey scripts to like get rid of Jimmy Wales' face and things like that. You kid, but I've been, like, in the last 2 weeks or so, I've been editing a shit ton of stuff on Wikipedia
and
sites.
All you see, every time you go to a page, there's Jimmy's face.
Yeah,
you leave him alone, man.
Well, at least they make it. At least it's not the same picture all the time. At least they're time on page.
But the problem is you can disable it, but you have to, if for each different Wikimedia site you use, you have to disable it separately.
Well, you know, they're trying to raise some money here.
I know, but I haven't got any money to give them, so they can fuck off. So I ended up writing a one-line Grease Monkey script, which just, for all Wikimedia sites, just removes the Jimmy Wales banner. Because, like, I go and edit, like, French Wikipedia and, like, all these other sites, and then
You remind me of the people, right? Who moan about NPR fucking doing their pledge drives, you know, because they haven't got the money, you know? Well, it's like, well, you know, you enjoy the service, but you can't sit back and
for the fucking site.
Yeah, that's what I mean,
and fixing their goddamn spelling errors, and then they're harassing me for money.
They need money to, like, carry on.
I know they do, but I haven't got any money, so...
Well, maybe you should find some money for them to...
When I become Bill Gates-type rich, I'll which is quite unlikely given the Brown report into higher education funding.
Oh, dear. Anyway, to get back to my point about this, which you've all gone off on, which I've forgotten about it. Yes, Stallman and the Free Software Foundation, you know, they write about this, saying, you know, keeping your stuff in the cloud, it's bad. Chrome OS, bad because it encourages you to keep stuff in the cloud. But people are already keeping stuff in the cloud. You know, people already have...
Let me jump in here now. This is the thing, right? Okay, there's a difference between... Yeah, this is fundamental, right? I think this is... Well, you kind of talked about it. We've talked about it before in other programs, but there is a difference between you're using your email in the cloud, putting your email in the cloud, and putting all your data in the cloud, and like using something like the Chrome OS. Mm-hmm. You know, anyone that says they're the same is fucking nuts. You know,
I know. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying that. That this article's come out on the back of the CR48, the Chrome OS test machines are going out, and the Free Software are saying it's bad because of cloud computing. And, you know, the two aren't exactly the same. You know, one's encouraging the use of the other.
It's just the Free Software Foundation saying
the cloud computing
their long-standing policy of we don't like cloud computing.
Yeah.
And tagging it on the back of the new computers out. Or
which
the
is what
new
everyone
test
does.
Machines are out. I'm not as bad against this as I'm sound like. You know, yes, it's true. You know, you need to think about this, but people have got such conflicting ideas about it. You complain about privacy and, oh God, somebody's going to know all the stuff about me, and then they put all their where they are and what they're doing on places like Foursquare and Facebook and stuff. You know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It can be a bit silly.
And as you said, if you're worried about your mail, encrypt it. But if you think that's saving it, email has to go across a whole load of public servers to get to you. You know,
yeah.
So
does everything on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Internet. So you think, oh, you know, I keep my stuff locally. Yeah. If the government wants it, they're going to break into your house and steal your computer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and also, you know, if somebody really wants to read my email from the British government, right, are they going to, you know, they may actually find that getting into Google's servers is a hell of a lot more difficult than getting into my house.
Yeah.
You know, they probably have slightly better locks.
Yeah.
And slightly better security. Which reminds me, actually, of when I was, when I last had to send some information to... to a client to explain where their data was being hosted, and we were hosting it in a US data center, and so I basically just went onto the data center website and pulled down their like security details PDF and copied and pasted a bunch of awesome stuff from this. And it was reported back to me that the bit about guard dogs really impressed them in the meeting.
Wow.
It's like, we've got dogs guarding our data. Yeah, so you might have to, there's another thing which, you know, as well as the dogs, you actually have to keep the Linux up to date.
Yeah. And the firewall running. And drives are swappable, etc.
No, it's on a VPS, but
and the thing is, this stuff is important. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a big fight about it. I know I come across as the Apple fanboy in this show, but these things are important. I've had a couple of computers die recently, and it's when it goes and you suddenly realise that, you know, I have backups. I have strategy for backups, but if I was just a little bit lax, there'd be a whole load of stuff which I wouldn't be able to get hold of, because, you know, I try and make sure that I have all my I've got lists of things like passwords and things to do and the ways to set up my machines, etc. And I don't use them prettily in an Apple Pages format. They're just plain text, you know. And I make sure they're in plain text and they're in formats like plain text or PDF, which I can read regardless of what machine I'm looking at, regardless of whether I have to try and get at this file using my iPhone or I have to use somebody's Windows machine to get hold of it, you know. So this sort of data interoperability stuff that we all make fun of, and or you may think isn't, I don't find important, that groups like the Free Software Foundation and
who makes fun of that?
And yourself. Yeah, well, I do a bit, you know, but you know, I realise it's important. I realise things like interoperability is important. I realise a lot of things that...
So why do you do something about it then?
What I say, what?
Why do you do something about it?
I am doing something about it. I'm thinking... No, what I'm trying to say is I realise it's important and I think about it. So you make choices about...
Yeah, by buying an Apple.
But you don't have to apply it to every aspect of your life. You just have to be aware of things like this.
In the same way
as trying to keep your... if you're really worried about your email being stored on a server somewhere, encrypt it.
Sorry, but if you're worried about data privacy, buying a Mac is actually a pretty damn good, you know, buying Apple stuff is a pretty damn good way of doing things.
Yeah, but getting access to my data again in case I lose my machines.
Yeah.
How'd you figure that out?
Like a hard drive failure.
Yeah.
With a hard drive failure, I need to be able to, until I can get my computers up and running again, I've still got data which I need to access. After all of it, but there's some bits on there that I need, even just like set up my computer again.
Huh? Wait a minute. I missed something, right?
Yeah.
So, how does buying a Mac help you with?
I never said that.
The point is that if you buy into the whole the argument which the free software people are making that you should keep your data on your local machine. Give up Spotify and use iTunes. Buy an iPad and sync all your data onto that.
Wouldn't support using
Spotify
iTunes
either.
Or supporting Spotify, so that doesn't make sense.
Well, no, it doesn't. But I'm kind of kidding. I mean, the point is that, like, you know, people are like, well, you know, you're storing all this data on your thing. Well, you know, borrow somebody's iPad and open up VLC. It's all stuff stored locally that people have, you know, that people have got off the net. And it's the same, you know, Apple haven't been pushing the whole cloud computing thing nearly as much as anyone else. Like, they've been very, very subtly saying, oh, well, if you want to buy Mobile Me, we'll reluctantly flog it to you for 99 quid.
But the reason they do that is because they know that compared to other web services out there that you get for absolute bugger all freeness, you're paying $99 a year for something that it's getting better, but it's still really, you know, apart from a few services, it's still zonking over. I mean, Dropbox is free, but, you know, iDisk is a pain. And it shouldn't be, but it is. You know, it just doesn't sync the way you expect it to. But the other bits that do sync, like, you know, syncing settings between machines works. You know, I can be tracked by my iPhone. I can share my calendars and, you know, things like that are workable, but not as much as you'd expect it to be. that's not the point. The point Ian is not the fact that just because I use an Apple doesn't mean I have to put everything into a non-proprietary or non-open way. I am aware of things that are supposed to be open, and I'm aware of the advantage of using open data formats. You know, things like there's a whole load of documents. You know, we all have these documents in our lives, and you know, you don't want to lose them, so you scan them and you send them somewhere that's not your own house. But if anything happens to my house, like it burns out, I can't go around saying, you know, I need a computer that will read these files. So you try and store those files in as open a format as possible. Or you try and store them where they can get them. You know, so you make choices about your data. You make choices about how you want to store your data, how you want to encrypt your data. But doesn't always, you know, so just because you have your stuff in the cloud doesn't mean it's in the cloud like everyone else is in the cloud. You know, there are still steps you can take that will make it secure, or you just because it's on your own personal hard drive doesn't mean it's any more secure than it is in the cloud. You know, there's choices you need to make.
It's about having backups. It's about having synchronization between machines. It's about having things like, you know, the thing which I think is going to kill all this cloud hype is actually when people finally realize in about 3 months' time that IPv4 is actually a finite fucking resource.
I think the data lost you tens of millions of them now, aren't they?
They're apparently going to run out in about... it's now down to like the 100 million left mark was passed about a week ago, which may not sound a big deal for people who don't know much about networking, but considering they're assigning bloody thousands every hour, It's basically the IPv4 address space is going to be exhausted in about three months' time.
Most of them are wasted ones.
And a huge chunk of them are owned by massive corporations who got assigned them early on in the process and who don't really want to give them up because they've got fucking millions of them. But anyway, hopefully, once the, as with the human species, you have to wait until absolute fucking crisis point.
Or the Tritopolics.
As we've seen with things like climate change, before anyone pays any fucking attention. And so hopefully in the next year or so, somebody might actually get their finger out and start doing IPv6 properly. Mm-hmm. And then of course we'll have more IP addresses than we can know what to do with. And we can start, you know, breaking down stupid NAT crap and actually assigning every damn computer on the internet an IP address.
This is going to make you laugh.
Sorry?
This is going to make you laugh. When I first started learning how to program, this is a long, long time ago. And you know, you get a GUID, a GUID.
Yeah.
I used to be reluctant to generate them because I thought they were a finite resource.
Wow.
That passed fairly soon. But I remember for a while, I thought, oh, God, if I use that, is that like taking one away? But
you have to go online and request one from Microsoft or something. But the
I get your point. But
once everyone has an IP address for every single machine on the network, and even if that doesn't happen, you still have things like XMPP, which are penetrating behind these NAS. Then you have that. You have reasonably fast connections, and you stop kind of needing to have centralized data services because you can just connect to machines.
Yeah, but then it's not centralized data service. It's still a data server. It just happens not to be one. That's in your control, in your house.
Here's the difference. I have a bunch of stuff on my machine. If I want it, I connect to my machine and get it. Yeah. Rather than if I want something, I have to remember to have it in the right folder such that the machine syncs it up to Dropbox.com. And then, you know, that's the difference. You're serving your own stuff up. Then all this blather about clouds and all that stuff just, you know, disappears because you just have computers on a network connecting to one another and serving files to one another as and when they're needed.
Oh, that sounds like hacker joy.
In the negative sense?
In the negative sense.
Well, yeah, people will have to actually...
Or script kiddie joy, sorry.
People will actually have to, you know, stop masturbating and actually do some security, but that shouldn't be too difficult, you know.
Yeah, but when it happens that somebody doesn't, then everyone talks about it. And what the hell am I talking about? Sorry, that was a brain fart there. So, somebody's not going to do it properly, and then somebody over at Tenkrach is going to write an article about how it's a really bad idea to do it yourself, and look, so-and-so did it, and he got hacked.
Okay.
Because he's some 16-year-old from Texas who didn't know what he was doing.
And this is TechCrunch, and we can laugh at them.
No. I'm not saying they have. I'm saying they will do.
But it's still TechCrunch, and we can still laugh at them, because they'll still be wrong.
But then some people take them seriously.
Mm.
Too many.
It's actually, it reminds me, I saw a really amusing tweet this week from somebody who said they were talking about how people are now attaching the word semantic to everything. It's become the new buzzword. And they were saying that they'd seen a semantic design agency. And they were saying people seem to be happy about semantic on everything except the semantic web.
do they do semantic antivirus as well?
Okay. Right. On that note, should we move on?
Yeah, what else have we got?
I've got a whole bunch of issues. Which one to kind of pick on. Actually, I just want to bring up the Chrome OS stuff again, just briefly. The way I see the Chrome OS stuff is really right now is I see it a bit like the iOS stuff, basically. You know, it's going to be quite a controlled operating system. And if you like that, then great, you know, but you have to recognize that, you know, you're giving up a lot to use it, you know, and if everyone understands that, then that's okay. You know, they can do what they like. It's interesting.
Do you find it weird, Ian, that this is the same company that does Android? You know,
no, of course not. Because the difference is, right, and this is what kind of winds me up a little bit about Apple, right, is that Google are multifaceted and can do a completely open operating system such as Android, and can do a kind of completely closed system built on some open software such as Chrome OS, you know. And if Apple were as smart as everyone makes them out to be, they would do exactly the same thing. You know, they would have an open option and they'd have a closed option, you know? And they'll capture both ends of the markets.
I've worked it out. So has anyone heard of the horseshoe theory?
No, go on.
So the horseshoe theory is Wikipedia described it. It's a theory in political science which, quote, asserts that rather than the far left and the far right being at opposite and opposing ends of a linear political continuum, they in fact closely resemble one another, much like the ends of a horseshoe.
Okay.
And basically, if you imagine that you've got iOS on one end of the horseshoe, and you've got Chrome OS on the other end, and then you've got everything else in the middle. But everything else is kind of at the top of the horseshoe, and basically Chrome OS and iOS are very, very close together.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they're supposed to be at the complete other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, that would kind of make sense. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, it's the same as when I switched to using Android. I had no illusions that it was kind of like, there is quite a lot of Google kind of juice in it, but there wasn't, you know, it was enough for me to be happy that, you know, that it wasn't being completely taken over, but Chrome OS is. However, I would highly recommend it to my parents. Yeah, you know, I was going to install Chrome OS on their machine a while ago, you know, although I am very touchy about the kind of like the ability that most of the stuff is going to be kind of synced to the cloud, and I don't really kind of quite understand what that means. But
yeah, why don't you just install Ubuntu?
I really have,
and set it up so that you can install updates remotely.
Yeah, I have.
Turn on SSH so you can log in remotely and update stuff.
Yeah, I've done that already.
And then I'm not sure what benefit Chrome OS gives you over just using Ubuntu.
You're
Sorry?
No, yeah. You are essentially your own Google in that sense. You're pushing your own updates. You can control things from remotely. Mm. You know.
But that's the thing. The difference is, right, is that I don't want to be Google. I want to... I'm happy to offload that stuff to Google to do.
I'm sure Ubuntu must have an automatic updates thing. Like a thing which literally says, when you shut down the machine, kind of like Windows, there's a bunch of stuff which needs to update.
There is.
Just turn that on, and then I'm not totally sure what benefit you're getting.
I think it's a benefit in the apps that they're providing and sort of support and stuff like that.
Well, you go to if you want to use Google Docs, then you go to the website.
No, but the difference, you understand. This is what I'm saying, right? Is that for example, my parents, right? You know, going to the website is a pain in the ass. They don't understand what address they need to put in. And then they get kind of spoofed by some unknown URL going somewhere else. This is what I mean. Just, you know, it's just easier. No.
I hate to be reductionist about this, but like, it seems like there's a bunch of
I should set up all the bookmarks that they're going to use in the next, you know, the next 2 years now.
Basically, yes.
No. No. That's what I thought about Chrome OS. Anyway, so we're moving on. I got a couple of things. I quite like, and it's actually quite a similar issue again, is I'm interested to see how the Amazon Kindle is kind of like spreading its wings and flying away with the e-book market. And also you guys must have noticed that there's the Kindle software now on every single platform.
I read Kindle books on the iPad.
I read it
very, very occasionally.
I do it occasionally on the iPhone, but the software is different because they have it on the Mac and it's really sucky on the Mac.
That'll change.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. The stuff on the iPhone is great.
Okay.
The iPad one's okay. The only problem I have is the fact that I have that. I have Goodreader, I have Papers, and I have Instapaper, and the gestures are all different between all of them, and it really gets on my tits, the fact that you're having to switch, you know, you're having to remember what should be a very natural thing, you know, swipe to turn a page, and they all implement it very, very slightly differently. So you then have to keep track of which one you're using and use the right commands, but that's another matter entirely.
So anyway. So the point is that what I really like about this is that it takes advantage. Well, it makes ebooks, you know, obviously a lot more usable, a lot more friendly. But also, it means that if you, for example, like myself, have actually got a Kindle, then you know it's being sold for the reasons of readability, opposed to because that's the only platform you can read these ebooks on.
For the witch.
It's an evil closed platform.
Well, I'm under the illusion that it's closed, but all the things that I've done, I still never bought an actual ebook. You know, I just download them and just copy them over. You know, in Collabora, and it just works, no problem. You know,
onto the Kindle.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can actually drag stuff onto the Kindle without even having to have any software. It's a bit like the Sony ebook reader I used to have. You know, it just used to copy. It's just that some book types don't work. Like, for example, I think EPUB doesn't work. PDF works, yeah. It's just that you can't scale
it. Is it as crappy as it is on other ebook readers?
I think the Sony one was slightly better, so I think the Kindle wasn't not as good as that one. Interesting.
That's the killer thing for me with the iPad is the fact that it's a big screen and it's colour, and therefore reading PDFs is lovely.
Okay, but
and I read a lot of PDFs because you know.
Okay, fair enough. That was kind of like I was just interested to see where that's going to go because. I think it's going to be a bit like, like, you know how like Netflix in America is like taking over. You know, it's like everything has Netflix on it now. You know, and at some point, everything in the UK will have Love Film on it. You know, and it will be the default option for all these kind of streaming services. You know,
but Love Film actually sends you the DVD.
Not all the time.
No, I know, no, but it depends on your, I mean, my subscription, I get the DVDs, but I get a whole load of films I can watch for free on the website, and these aren't, you know, these aren't just old crappy films, this one, they've got some decent films on there.
Yeah.
You can watch for free, stream online, so, you know, not a bad deal. But they are taking over more, it's just, when the Americans are always talking about Netflix, and I generally just sort of fill it into it.
Turn off.
Love Film, yeah, but...
I get all my films from ftp.debian.org. There's lots of really, really amazing movies you can watch on ftp.debian.
Do you get Inception on there?
Sorry?
Do you get Inception on there?
Let me just look. I think you can.
I've actually watched the first half hour of Inception, and I can't understand what on earth is going on.
What? You are.
I'm serious. I got to the bit where, like, they're sat in a cafe and everything's blowing up around them and they're in a dream.
Man, I can't believe. Okay, what really bugs me about this, right? Is that,
I haven't watched it, so no spoilers.
Yeah. Okay. Inception's not that hard of a film to follow.
Dude, you need to print out Wikipedia for.
It's not like Donnie Darko or anything like that. It's not like it's complicated.
I cannot understand Donnie Darko either. Donnie Darko, I thought, what on earth is going on in this film?
Oh, man. Can I do a whole rant about people who should understand this stuff but don't?
Hang on, I haven't finished the film yet, so don't, you know, I'll still go back and finish.
Even in the first 5 minutes, the first 5 minutes, right, are very confusing.
It was a jump, because, like, he's in this place with the old guy, and then suddenly he's not in there with the old guy. So obviously they better get back to that bit by the end of the film, otherwise I'm going to be a bit upset. But there's this Australian, not Australian, there's this other film by Shane Carruth called Primer, however you want to say it.
Oh, Primer, yeah, I got that.
That's the film. I own that film, and I've got a couple of printouts, but I still can't figure that out.
Have you not? You've seen the timeline of Primer then, yeah?
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
Yeah, but see, that's a complicated film.
So I can sort of see it.
Inception's nothing like that. It's nothing, not even close to
and
that.
And I fuck with that.
So Inception should be easy.
I watched up to that bit and I gave up. Probably because I didn't.
I watched Harry Potter and my head hurts at the end there.
What? The hardest part of Harry Potter was when she.
Whoa. We've gone from Inception.
Yeah, I was trying to make a self-deprecating joke, but Ian's taking it rather more literally.
He's taking it seriously.
Okay. Anyway, so what was I saying? Okay, so it's interesting. Oh, also, two other things. I wrote this in the chat for some reason. iMac Plus.
Speaking of books, I found this weird. I said I've had a change. Sorry, Ian. Before you move on.
Yep.
Before you move on, talking about ebook.
Go on.
I've got the space we can get online, you know, proper legitimate sort of PDFs of books. But I was looking through the facts. I was trying to synchronize the machines up.
Hello.
I find it quite useful for places like the Kindle books or the iBooks or whatever. Is that you know where the books come from?
You're breaking up a little bit.
And I've got no idea where they come from. Where I think they're... Sorry.
You're breaking up quite a bit.
What was that?
You're breaking up quite a bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, it's the advantage of having a reader is that you know where you're getting your books from, rather than just having these PDFs scattered all over the place so you can't remember where you got them from or where you're supposed to update them from or anything.
Right.
It's just an aside. It just means manage it easier. You know,
I mean, it depends on,
it would be nice if you have these. If I could import my other PDF books into my Kindle.
You can.
Can I?
Yeah.
No, not my Kindle, my Kindle email.
Oh, no, you can't, no. That's the thing that bugs me about the Kindle software.
Oh, you see,
I've got all this stuff, that I would like to sync onto my phone and stuff, but it won't let me do it.
But you can do it on the Kindle itself.
No, you can copy it to the Kindle,
yeah,
and you can manually copy it on Android, but you can't actually sync it over a Whisper network.
Sync it. I got you.
That's the frustrating. It has to be from the Kindle store. Yeah, which is because it's annoying.
Then you'll have something like then you'll have a book reader that acts like something like iTunes, which is something that manages and your synchronization and the storage and the playback of your music. Have something like that for your books, single application.
Yeah,
I found that So on that, like, the way I manage all that stuff is I just have a big folder and use rsync. And I've actually found that for all the sort of literary miscellanea that one accrues, the simple solution is you have that, and you have an ebook reader which mounts as a hard drive, and then you can then sync that up using Unison.
And Unison, yeah.
And then you can also And then also there's a Goodreader on the iPad, which is a 59p reader app for PDFs. That you can also it has an internal server, which is WebDAV or some other crap, right? You can connect to that and mount it as a hard drive in OS X, and then you can do a Unison sync to that as well over Wi-Fi.
Right, so I get.
Which is
I'm thinking that way.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I've been doing mine. And the only problem is that because of the fact that WebDAV or whatever the fuck it is, I don't know how it works, like HTTP, some like HTTP thing, because it doesn't really support the file system operations, it takes a really long time to sync. Like, it has to go through and manually check every file to see if it's been updated.
Yeah.
So it can, if you've got a lot of files, it can take a fucking long time to actually do it. But basically, you have that, and then you have like a little rake script, which just does it for you. So I just plug all the various things in.
That's getting to a stage you think somebody needs to write an app for that.
Well, they have and they haven't. Basically, I have.
I don't know. Yeah, I know you. I know you're talking about it and it sounds like it's one thing, but lots of things, but it is one. What I'm talking about is I don't have that many PDFs yet, but I know the more and more I'm going to have more because it's just, especially with reference books, it's so much more convenient to have them online than anywhere else. And at the moment, I'm thinking they're on Dropbox, and these are reference books mostly, so I don't really need a place, a place to. They're not like books that I'm reading, but if I start getting into that, I will need them a bit.
So there's,
but yeah,
lots of people who are. Lots.
I mean, there are ways of doing. I know it's just, but
Have you seen the other thing which a lot of people are using now for like academic stuff? Is have you seen Papers? It's a Mac app.
Yeah, I know the guys that do that.
Macintosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
Mac, iPad, iPhone app, yeah.
Yeah, so I have that synced up between the Mac and iOS.
I know you mentioned you had that.
Student discount for that. University, like,
which is quite strange that the student discount for it, since it's essentially a student application. That's how they first. That was their first use of it.
Yeah.
They had their own itch up to scratch, and they did it that way.
It's not necessarily, if you're, students will buy it, but then also if students have it,
PDF storage,
then professors are quite likely to buy it too. When they see, you're syncing all your stuff between your computer and your iPad and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. anyway, shall we move on?
I know, this was before the iPad, but yeah.
iMac Plus. What the fuck?
iMac Plus, aka iMac X.
Is that what it's called, is it?
Yeah.
What is it? What is it and what does it do? And why should
I don't know. I've been, since you brought it up in the chat, while you're all talking about Kindles, I've been on Google trying to find out what the fuck it's all about.
Okay.
And I have no fucking clue how it's supposed to work. Apart from it sort of says that it's sort of like, right, it says here, it's a new implementation of IMAP. And then it's got this thing where it's saying, it basically seems to be saying that it's a way to have synchronization between IMAP servers. So you can have a remote server and then you have a local server, and then the local server connects to the remote server, gets all the stuff, and then you hook up to the the local server. But it doesn't seem to explain what the actual differences are between IMAP and IMAP Plus or IMAP X or whatever you want to call it.
Well, it sounds like Federation.
Kind of. But it seems to be just for, you know, just for, it seems to be saying that the only client that seems to have support for it is, here we go, superuser.com. What is IMAP Plus? In a new version of Evolution, there is an option for an IMAP Plus server type. What is it? In short, it lets you access your mail on a remote server. It does not download the mail to the local client, so that any changes made on any client are reflected on the server and therefore globally accessible. This is useful for people who check mail on multiple devices. IMAP Plus, or IMAP X, is just Evolution's better management of the IMAP protocol with their client. You can read here and here. Right, so basically it's saying they've just improved the support for IMAP in Evolution.
Oh, so it's just an Evolution thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I was getting excited about it. I was thinking, ooh, it's something new.
Yeah. But you're going to sort of lobbying Gmail and you need to support this.
Like, yeah, we do it. Okay.
So, yeah, if you read the super user response, it seems to explain. Oh, here we go. It says here that basically what they've been doing is they now support fetch messages in batches, fetch messages with large attachments in multiple pieces, idle support, which is push email, supporting more operations on messages and the ability to cancel operations. So it seems to me that this is kind of replicating something that's a bit strange and silly. Like Evolution, part of the thing I don't like about Evolution, we ranted about Evolution earlier, is it reminds me of Outlook.
What?
In the worst way. Like, the problem with it is that it's basically a monolithic mail client. And the nice thing with, if you get kind of a mutt type setup, and I know you hate Mutt, but you can use it with Thunderbird and a bunch of other stuff. But the nice thing is that if you have the sort of setup which I'm using on my Linux machines, is you have everything is split out into separate processes.
Oh, great.
So the mail checking, you have a process called offline IMAP, which basically downloads all your mail in the background. Yeah. Then you have Mutt to read mail. You don't have to have Mutt open to have your mail download. Then you have there's a program called MareX, which you can use for searching mail. And these are all kind of split off, and then you can basically chop in whatever editor you want to use to edit your mail. So if that's Vim or Gedit or whatever the hell you want to use, and when you write a message, it'll open that up. And you write it in that, and then it all kind of works. It's
that sounds like a mess.
It's not a mess. That's the point, is that it keeps everything... Oh, fuck off. remind me next time to turn instant notifications off. actually, that's pretty crap, instant notifications, because those were all the chat messages you guys sent about 5 minutes ago. I'll just be instantly notified to my iPod. Anyway, no, the point with all that is the fact that because they're all running as separate processes, you can control them a lot easier. So if you have, for instance, have a netbook and you want to check all your email, you run the offline IMAP process, and then when you're on the train, you're not running the offline IMAP process and using your very expensive 3G data to download all your mail, you're just reading it. So you can control everything separately. You don't necessarily have to have a big expensive, you can basically set up when you want your mail to be indexed, so it's not doing a lot of I/O crap on your mail while you're trying to read it and potentially fucking it up. So there is a lot, there is some sense behind it. And of course, the other point with Mutt is the fact that it's fast as fuck and uses no memory at all, basically.
Okay. I see what you're saying, but well written piece of software like Evolution, you know.
You're talking about the same Evolution.
I tried Thunderbird and Evolution, and I still use fucking Outlook at work, and literally I told my boss kind of come back to work, I told him, look, I don't want to use Outlook anymore. It's driving me up the fucking wall, right? It's driving me nuts. I can't take it anymore, you know?
Oh, Evolution does talk to Outlook service, doesn't it? Exchange service.
Yeah, it talks to Exchange service. So,
okay. So there is a grudging reason why you might want to use it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to install Evolution at work to get it working because of that, you know?
There's an easier solution, Ian. Just tell them you want a Mac and use whatchamacallit? What's the Outlook client for Mac?
What? Why would I do that? Someone sent me a tweet the other day saying, "Have you seen the Inception app for the iPhone?" I'm like, "No." They go, "Well, if you buy an iPhone, you can download it." Like, why would I do that? Why would I do that? Why would I pollute my life with that?
Well, you could Hackintosh your machine at work, and then get
steady on.
And then, like that though.
And then download from ftp.debian.org a nice Debian ISO, which lets you read your mail using the Debian Microsoft Exchange client for Mac, Entourage, that's what it's called. But I didn't say that, did I? Yeah. I said you were going to buy that legitimately from Microsoft for money.
Richard Stallman uses this.com.
Yes.
He does it all offline.
Yeah. And good on him, I reckon. I do all my email. Okay. I do a lot of my email offline.
Okay. Well, anyway. I just what you said. I mean, the iMac Plus stuff. Okay. Well, it wasn't a big deal. I was just looking for something like, I just thought, oh, the iMac protocol's been around for ages and there's a extension to it that makes it better. Oh, that sounds quite interesting. Yeah, I'll try it out and see what happens. Nor did it work to my other stuff. Yeah, nothing seemed to get better or worse. So I thought, okay.
Yeah, IMAP is one of those things where it's like, it's pretty bad, but it's less bad than all the alternatives.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not wild about it, but considering the alternative
it's like
is
democracy.
Either, yeah, it's the alternative is either POP 3 or POP 4. You could always use POP 4 if you're nuts.
POP 4?
Yeah, it does exist.
Oh my god.
Or bloody Exchange. Given those are the alternatives, IMAP seems a stunningly good idea.
Yeah.
No, the nice thing with offline IMAP is it basically just makes you a mailder, so you can use anything which supports mailder.
Okay.
The downside of offline IMAP is the fact that it's a hastily hacked together piece of Python which has been written, has loads of holes in it, and I've actually had to go and patch it, various things to actually make it work, and it crashes quite frequently. Other than that, it's a really good idea.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Basically, every couple of days I have to restart it. And I actually, I think I have a script which runs periodically to check whether or not it's crashed. And if it has crashed, it restarts it.
Okay.
It's like the good old days of Netscape. somebody I know actually, ages ago, actually I think it's, I think Libby Miller used to have it. She used to actually have a web page which you could go to and press a button and it would kill her Netscape install.
What?
So that she could say to somebody else in the office, like, my Netscape's crashed, and they could just go to the website and kill her Netscape.
Wow.
Quality piece of software that was.
Jeez. Okay, guys, I think we are hitting that point of no return. How long have we been recording for?
You had one more thing on your list.
Aaron.
Oh, no, I'm going to leave that for now.
Hacking Foursquare. Okay.
I actually came up with an idea for a really good Foursquare app recently, which is you have a thing which works out which train you're on, and then when the train's late, it sends you an email with a pre-formatted PDF, which you could basically just print out, chuck your railway ticket in, and send it off to the railway company to complain. Automate the process of complaining about the shitness of the British train system.
Oh, God.
But, unfortunately, I was trying to find out if you could email the complaints, but you can't. You have to send them by post.
What's that mean? Yeah.
So, so I'm going to hopefully try and build a thing which will automate creating PDFs to complain about the crapness of the train system.
Anyway, I think that's it. We're pretty much done.
Yep.
And so, what I've got to say is, fuck, that's over.
Yeah, fuck, that's it.
I put that in early. So, let's say goodbye, guys.
Actually, today was thank fuck that start.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Mm, yeah, and it was getting later and later. And,
I was waiting for you guys. I was sitting there.
We were waiting for you.
Eating my ice cream, looking at the thing, going, when are you guys going to like stop talking about like URLs and actually like friendly?
He sent you a message saying, right, I'm ready when you are.
Mm.
Yeah, but I was late. I was like.
Well, okay. Anyway.
You have to go for what? Okay. So, Ibiza, say goodbye. Oh, can you say, actually, when you say goodbye, can you say it in a nice, cheery, ho-ho-ho, happy Christmas type way?
Goodbye!
How's that? Very good. Tom Morris?
Now I have a machine gun. Ha, ha, ha. Best Christmas film ever. Die Hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, goodbye. Hope you all have a very, very happy Christmas. Editing Wikipedia and masturbating and doing all the various other things you do. And this show will probably be up by Easter.
2012. Just the football.
And then I'll say goodbye in my ho 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 way. Goodbye and happy Christmas, people. I don't know when the next show will be. I'm actually going to spend some time
greetings
down, may not be near the internet for a while, so you might have to dial me in. So
we might have to transport some internet over to you. We'll send it on a truck, but, you know.
Well, yeah.
It's on a big truck.
Okay.
It's not a big truck. Sorry, it's not a big truck.
But don't send it
it's a series of tubes. We might get a tube over to you.
A nice fiber optic tube would work for me. Anyway.
You're like, stop dreaming. Yeah.
Okay. And so that is it. Thank you very much. This might be the last Tech Grumps for this year, maybe. Mm. We'll see.
Yep.
You know? We actually plan to, like... Oh, okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.